Welcome back to the Shanti Ma podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Govinda Music. Govinda is an Austin-based producer and composer who has mastered the art of global fusion. The Govinda Show is truly a multi-sensory experience that immerses the audience with a textured exotic atmosphere which features mesmerizing vocals, visual performance artists, live projections, and a uniquely crafted violin for a truly energetic and magical live presence. You can catch him February 14th in Phoenix, Arizona, or February 19th at Envision Festival in Costa Rica. Be sure to check him out on Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Bandcamp. Today on the show, we have a very special guest, Deep Kumar. Deep has traveled all over the world teaching yoga in places such as Europe, Malaysia, Australia, Egypt, Bali, and Thailand, to name a few. After learning the classical values of yoga more than 25 years ago at the foothills of the Himalayas, he has since trained extensively in Iyengar, Ashtanga, Hatha, Yin, meditation, and pranayama. He blends the ancient traditions of yoga, including Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, with an in-depth understanding of contemporary science, such as psychology, physiology, and anatomy. Deep firmly believes that yoga is a combination of art and science, and when practiced correctly, it may guide an individual toward the right way of living. Not only that, he is my own personal yoga teacher, in which I have learned so much from and continue to learn from. Please give it up for the wonderful Deep Kumar. How are you doing?
I'm good. Finally, we could make it. I can hear you now.
No kidding. So nice to see you as well.
Same here, Shanti.
So you're living in Bali. How long have you been there?
Right now I'm in Malaysia.
Oh, you're back in Malaysia?
In Kuala Lumpur for my break.
Okay.
Then I will go Bali again.
Okay. And how long have you been in Bali? You've been there for like almost a year?
Yeah. And from last May, just May, you can say 2018 May, I'm working there, but not like all the time, just going there and coming back.
Okay.
It just happened there.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's not a bad place to be.
It's happening.
No kidding. Well, thanks for coming on my podcast. You've got a lot of wonderful things to teach people and to share. And so I'm also very excited because I need some refreshers. I feel like I've forgotten almost everything you taught me.
No, really. We'll get into that.
Okay. So can you, just before we get into some of the like more details around yoga and what you teach, mm-hmm. can you explain how you found yoga or yoga found you? Like how did that start for you?
See, if you are Indian and you're living into the places where temples are there, and most of the monks and swamis and yogis visit your places and roaming around the country, I think it's a pretty normal thing to come in touch with yoga then. So I also come in touch with yoga in that moment. And then slowly, as the life going forward, become part of my life.
Didn't you say something about, I remember a story about how your yoga teacher would bribe you with pop or something like that? Soda pop? What was that one?
So you want to get into that one, huh?
Yeah, come on. Those are the good stories.
That's simply, you know, that my teacher was one of the rich person in the place. And yoga was his hobby.
Okay.
And he no need to work because he has a lot of, you know, in the villages, people have land and that's more than enough. The land and land is giving them. So he was learning yoga and doing all these things. But when he turned into 50, somehow he settled there. And he was looking for someone that he can pass on it. Because that is the thing. When you have, you want to share it. And he don't want to share as a money base. He don't need. So he just wants someone so he can teach what he have. So then he found me. And when he found me, that I was a very active person, you know, in the village. We just play the things and enjoy the things. So he found out that he would love to pass it to me. So he approached me that I want to teach you yoga. And I said, I don't want to learn. Why? So finally, he feel out that he offered me that he will give me a good breakfast. And, you know, the breakfast is a really good thing in the villages. You have like, you know, Indian way of villages like paratha, you have yogurt, you have butter, then milk. And then there are, you know, we call it pinnies. Like this is a traditional kind of sweet in India.
Okay.
So finally, I said, yes, okay. That's it.
How old were you?
And my yoga journey started around 14.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
So that was my yoga journey started by one of the beautiful men. I will say that from him, I got the taste of yoga. And in the villages also, you know, people come in the temples and they do, you know, this yoga philosophy and thing goes on in the temple. It's a normal routine in India.
Okay. And so then I was kind of reading a little bit what you have on your website and kind of looking into some more of, I guess, your history with yoga before having you on the podcast. And how old were you when you went and studied at the ashram at the foothills of the Himalayas? I don't know how to pronounce the name of the school, so I don't want to butcher it.
It's a Rishikesh. It's a Rishikesh, and it's Tapovan, we call it.
Okay.
Tapovan Dham.
Tapovan
so
Dham.
Around Tapovan Dham, I spent my 6 months there.
Okay.
In learning.
Okay. And then after that, you went to a place in, and I don't know how to pronounce it either.
Kevalya Dham. Maharashtra, yeah. Kevalya Dham.
Okay.
It's a city near Mumbai, Lonavala.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a kind of a big institute there, which work on yoga therapy. It's a Kevalya Dham.
Kevalya
Dham. So then I did my advanced teacher training diploma there.
Okay. Nice. So
that was the journey going on.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I guess for people listening who don't obviously know this, Deep is my yoga teacher. And I guess that would have been almost 3 years ago, I guess 2017. Seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
But I feel like with yoga, you never stop learning. There's so much. And I'm quite eager to learn a lot more. So happy to have you come on and share some of your knowledge. So thank you very much. So Deep, what is yoga?
That's a very simple question.
Okay.
And very complicated at the same time.
I was waiting for that part.
See, simple is that because the definition is available in the books. Intellectually, it can be understood very easily. But practically, to have in life, we call it a lifetime practice to understand what yoga is.
Mm-hmm.
So if I come to the intellectual understanding, which I can give, but practically it will appear when a person will take a decision to be on this path. It's a decision.
Mm-hmm.
When we have seen the life, we have seen the ups and downs of the life, and we found out that whatever way I have taken, whatever path I have been chosen, I have not found the peace at all.
Mm.
Even we get the things, though the situation is the same. even we don't get the thing, situation is the same. So then a realization happened that, okay, what's the next now? Like simply I will say, I will tell you a joke, then you will understand.
Okay.
So, and the joke is like that. There was one madhouse, and in that madhouse, there were two men. And one man is in the one cell, another man is in another cell. And there was one person who was visiting that place, was very interested into the behavior of the mad people. He saw the one mad man. He was having a picture of a beautiful girl in his hand and crying.
Okay.
Oh. And then he moved on, and there is another man having the picture of the same girl and crying. The person interested is the same girl picture. And why the two men are crying with the same girl picture? He said, this guy loved this woman, but he could not get it. So he went mad. Okay. So then another, he said, he got that girl. You getting it?
No. Did he go mental from the girl? I don't get it.
He said that this guy did not get the girl, he got mad.
Okay.
And this guy got the girl, and that's why he got mad.
Okay, so two sides of the same coin, they both go mad.
Coin. It is just a joke, but I'm taking either it's a man, it's a woman, either it's the thing. Even we get the things, but there is no peace. Mm. And even we don't get the thing, there is no peace. This is life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we understand it, then we want to take a decision, what path I want to take, which will bring me peace. Because we have seen the people who have everything in the life, but they are not peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And people who don't have, they are also not peaceful. Then who is peaceful? And what is the path to peace? What is the path to joy? What is the path of blessings? Then the path of yoga.
Right.
So that is, I said, practical way. But if I have to say intellectual way is what is yoga. Like right now, if my body is here, but my mind can be somewhere else, it mm-hmm. can be into my home, it can into things. So I can be thinking 1,000 things while sitting here. So it means my mind is not here. So a state of consciousness where your mind and body stay together. Like if body is here, mind is also here.
Mm.
It's not going anywhere. That state we call yoga. It's an intellectual understanding again.
Okay, so being in the present moment is yoga?
You can say that. Intellectually, it is very, very easy to understand it. This is one definition of yoga. Then another definition of yoga is, yoga means chitta vritti nirodha. This is a Sanskrit word, yoga chitta vritti nirodha, very famous from Patanjali.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga means chitta. Chitta means consciousness. And vritti means the movements. Like, chitta means consciousness. And vritti means movements. And nirodha means disidentification. When I disidentify from all the movements which is happening within me, that state called yoga. Like, If we see a movie on the projector, so there is a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the wall is chitta, it's blank. But vritti are all the pictures which are moving. Now, if wall is thinking and identifying with the movement that I am these pictures, is it true? Not. So the wall is a wall. But the movement which is happening on the wall through projector, the pictures which are moving, are different.
Right.
So same within me, I am born as a consciousness, but then I identify with all the thoughts and emotions and feelings within me, which are the byproduct of the environment which is given to me by my parents, by my society, by my university, by my culture, by all of this. And I start thinking, this is me. Right. So yoga is slowly, when you close your eyes, look within, that you have ability to see the thought. And thoughts will change. Right. And then you have ability to see your feelings, and feelings will change. So whatever is changing is not you. Thoughts are changing. How you can be this? Because morning you have a different thought. Evening you can have a different thought, which is opposite of that. So it means thoughts will change, but you will never change. You are the one who is the knower of the thought. And emotions will change. Tomorrow you have a good emotion. Yesterday can have a bad emotion. And again, in the future, they will changing. There is a fluctuation. So these fluctuations are the movements. But the knower of all this is the consciousness. So when slowly by doing yoga, you got established in your knowingness that I am the one who know it. I am the not that one who is changing. So slowly there is a gap between the thought, between the movements, between the emotion, and between the one who you are is the knower. So that gap, or the method which creates that gap, called yoga.
Right. Yeah, because chitta is kind of like, isn't that like what you're describing, kind of like a lens, like the lens in which you are viewing, kind of like through the ego, or the lens in which you're viewing the world? Am I understanding that correctly? Because I believe I watched a documentary on Gaia. Do you know Gaia TV? Have you ever watched Gaia before?
I heard about it, but I've never watched it.
Yeah, it's like a spiritual Netflix. But I was watching a guy on there, and he was explaining what chitta was, and it was sort of like the image of like a head, and like almost like the third eye, and the seer, and the projection of how you see the world around you. And he kind of described it like a lens. And so I was kind of thinking of that. I was seeing that when you were describing that. And I noticed that, especially when I was doing a lot of yoga after, you know, the TTC and coming home, I was noticing in myself, it felt almost like peeling away layers of my psyche and parts of myself that I didn't realize, or I didn't, I guess, parts of myself that I had never seen. I was beginning to see clearly, but I was seeing them in a more objective kind of way rather than like a self-judging, and there was a lot of acceptance. And then I had a car accident, and now I have to relearn all of the self-acceptance. Now I have to relearn it all. The universe was like, hey, Shanti, you think you learned your lesson? Well, let's see. So, well, why do you think yoga is needed now more than ever for the average person?
So if we see into the whole structure of this world right now, the world has everything actually what is needed to be. Needed to be happy, needed to be comfortable. Everything is available now. Like if we look at the lifestyle, if in the old times, in even the kings don't have this kind of lifestyle, which a common man has right now. We have all the comforts in the home. We have the food. We have everything what is needed to live a joyful life. But the humans are not joyful.
So true.
In the old time, there was no this much comfort. In the old time, even people had to struggle for food. There were no much understanding. So in that realm where persons are living, were living, was not easy environment, you know. Right now, we have everything actually what is needed. In the first time in humanity, people are reaching that almost, I'm not saying all, but almost the people have the comfort of life. But where is happiness? Where is joy? Where is bliss? Even people which I have seen in my life, which I have taught and I've seen, almost everybody is not satisfied at all with the life.
Interesting.
And there are thousands of complaints from the life that this is this, this is this, this is this. And whatever we bring into the life, it becomes a problem.
Why do you think that is?
The thing is that there is an outer education we have a lot. We have a lot of education in the schools. We have a lot of education in the society. We have a lot of education in the universities, which is all outer education. Mm. And outer education lead to dissatisfaction. There is dissatisfaction. Why? Because the education is based on competition.
Right.
The education is based on achievements. The education is based on ambitions. And there is always someone who is ahead of you and you have to cross that person. This race is not going to end. So the base of outer education, I'm not saying wrong, it is good. It is the way it is. But we don't have any inner education. A human knows how to achieve outside, but they don't know how to contact with themselves.
Right. We're always striving to be better, but no one, I mean, until my yoga course with you and Guru Mukh, no one ever taught me how to know who I was inside. That's why it was so transformative. No one teaches you that.
It is right, yes. There is a whole journey of becoming, how to become that, how to become that, but there is no education of just being.
Mm.
So there is a big difference between becoming and being. The whole outer education is a way of becoming. And whatever you become, it will be never satisfied because it is not your reality. The reality is always your being. So how to contact with your being within, which is already peaceful? If we look at Shanti, look at, we are born peaceful, isn't it? We are born happy. We are born joyful. A child, look at the child which is just 2-year-old or 3-year-old, how joyful, happy, blissful is. But then slowly, slowly, the layers of system and which is not bad, but layers of system and how to live, what to do, how to do all of these things, how to achieve these things, ambitions, goals, and projections and imaginations all take place. And that layer, how I am born, is all the time under these layers. So yoga is slowly, slowly peeling yourself, peeling all that which is given by this world, which is given by this society, and finding out the state how I am born actually.
Hmm.
And why yoga said goes there, because that is the state already within me. It is just hidden under all these layers. I no need to create happiness. You just need to peel this layer and happiness is already there. It is a byproduct, if I say, doing yoga practice, doing meditation. So once through this system, slowly, slowly we are peeling the layers, then the real meaning of life come front of us. So for that, inner education is needed. And yoga is an inner education, which is, I think, needed more than any other age in this age.
Hmm.
Because we are living all in that superficial layer, which is given. And that's why whole world is in conflict and tension and problem. But the moment as if you really on the path of yoga and understanding it perfectly, rightly, it starts slowly, slowly cutting all those layers and taking you within.
Right.
And that is needed in this age more than any other age, my dear.
And so do you think that like Sangha and community is important for people? Because I know something I've been contemplating a lot, and it was something that I started to question a lot when I came home from my TTC and from that trip, because just when you're in the right environment and you're around the right kind of people who everybody is in a state of wanting to elevate their consciousness, I found that I was able to just sort of relax into myself. I felt very understood, you know, good days, bad days. I felt very free no matter what I was going through, whether I was expressing joy that day, or maybe that day I was, you know, troubled by my mind, but I felt like I was able to really open up and to blossom. And I noticed that as soon as I came home, there was again this sense of rigidness and guarded. I immediately felt guarded. And I don't know if maybe that's just a North American thing, but I feel like people are so guarded here. So it's hard to get myself into this state that I was in when I was with everybody. And so I've been questioning a lot of that as well, like who you surround yourself with. What do you think about that?
Well, it is important that we are like affected by everything what is around us. Like simply think, if you saw a happy person on the street, how you will feel? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, if a person who is just passing by you smiling and singing, how you will feel different? And as a person who is going just sad and tense, how you will feel? So we are affected by the external environment around us. There is definitely that a commune, a society who is living on the basis of consciousness can be very big help. Where everyone is in this environment and helping each other to move forward. And realizing one thing, that I am the reason for my problem, not by another. That's the responsibility has to taken. Otherwise, I have seen, like somehow if a person is not aware, these kind of communities also become same problem, same thing, which we carry within. And they start projecting on each other. Mm-hmm. Let me say very clearly, like I am not denying that community can be help. Same thing. I will say that if a person who knows how to use the poison will become life-saving. And if a person who don't know how to use the nectar can become a poison. Mm. I have to take my responsibility first.
Right.
Like if a mother is carrying the child that, okay, let my child to be strong, but let him not to walk. The possible child will be strong?
No.
Not at all. Child has to walk. Child has to learn the ability to walk on his own legs. Community can be help, but sometime if I put, okay, only community can help me, no, that is wrong. Community can create an environment, but I have to walk. I have to take the responsibility of myself. Most of the time, people who goes to this community, actually they are running from their responsibilities too.
Right.
So that is wrong. Community can be helped, be in that environment, but knowing well that community is just the outer help. Inside, I have to work on myself by myself. And I have to take the responsibility. Because most of the time, in the community system, this is very easy to say, okay, if I have a problem, somebody else is responsible.
Yeah.
Then the change will never happen.
Right.
The change happened when I take fully responsibility that I can't control the behavior of others. It is a futile effort if you have to change the whole world then, and you can't. Mm-hmm. I have to be very aware and very much in this understanding that if I am not happy, I am responsible for it. And I have to work on myself for it. And whoever is outside is maybe can be a reflection of my own behavior.
Right. So personal responsibility for every thought, word, and action. Yes. Ahimsa.
Yes, my dear. Yes, my dear. That has to be. Otherwise, it can go into very different direction.
So true. So I guess, you know, we've kind of started getting into a little bit of what yoga is all about. How can yoga help a person on a physical level before we get into the energetic and mental aspect of yoga?
See, first thing in yoga, we say the right use of the body, which is actually disappearing in the world completely. Like, even if we see that either we use the body too much, so it's a trouble, or we don't use the body at all. So it's a pendulum which moves from one side to another side. Right use of the body, then in yoga we say, as Maharishi Patanjali, who wrote the Yoga Sutra, has given the definition, stable and comfortable. You have to use the body, it must be stable and it must be comfortable. So that's why yoga work on a lot of right alignments of the body in the yoga posture. Like, simply like on the feet level, how to use your feet properly. Like, if I have to describe, most of the people put the weight inside of the foot. Most of the people put the weight outside of the foot, and they never know about it in their whole life, and they go through the trouble of the knee and back and even many imbalances just because of this.
Because they've got an imbalance in their feet?
Yes.
Okay.
Imbalance in the feet. And like, if I say the feet has inside of the foot and outside of the foot, okay? Most of the people put 80% of pressure on the inside of the foot.
So their ankle rolling
most
in.
Of people, yes. And most of the people put the pressure outside, so the ankle roll out. Now, if the base is wrong, then the knee cannot be right.
Right.
And if the base is wrong, your lower back cannot be in the right position. If the base is wrong, your shoulders cannot be in the right position. So yoga works from the feet first, that there are points in your feet, which we call big mound inside of the big toe, small toe, which is inside of the small toe, then center of the heel. First, a person has to learn how to balance the weight on the feet first. So the base, the roots can be right. Then we work on the knee there, because joints are most important part of the body. And if the joints are not placed in right way, muscle will not work in the right way. So then we work further on the knee, how the knee should be. Most of the people don't know how to use properly the knee in daily life and in the exercising or in yoga posture. So then we correct the knee, and then we move towards the pelvic. That pelvic has positions. Pelvic can take many positions, forward, backward, sideward, upward, but the right position of the pelvic has to be found. So when yoga move from the foot, it move from the knee, it move from the pelvic, and then how to use the shoulders there properly. What is the position of the back of the head? So then every posture we work like that. So body come into the symmetry. And when your body joints are right and muscles are working properly, inner organs become relaxed.
Right. As you're explaining all of this to me, I'm like thinking about my knees, my shoulders back, head back.
Yes. Imagine, I will simply say to you one term, and I'm sure the beautiful friends who are listening to us, they will understand that there is a position of the pelvic which is anterior tilt, where the buttock goes back and chest goes forward. That is anterior tilt. And there is a posterior where buttocks go down towards the heel and lower back become flat completely.
Right. So that would be your butt sticking out or your hips jutting forward.
Yes.
Okay.
So if the anterior tilt pelvic is there, where buttock goes back, chest goes forward, create a high lumbar area, like lower back can be tense. Those people always gonna trouble with knee pain and back pain.
Right.
Even how much medicine they take, it's not gonna work. They need to work on their posture.
Right.
And then in yoga, we have the posture which slowly correct that. So in the physical level, working on right alignment, on the right posture, on the right breathing, can bring a really beautiful effect on the overall personality of a person.
Yeah, it's interesting because I did start noticing that, like at the gym, people, especially women, like everybody's obsessed with butts nowadays. I'm not sure why. I remember a time when to have a big butt was not a good thing, but now everyone wants a big butt. Anyways, I'm not complaining, but because of this, everyone is overworking. Like the people who lift a lot, they're overworking their glutes. They're overworking the glute max and not the rest, like the medius and the minimus. And so
yes,
something I've noticed a lot is people who have really big butts, they have the tilt in the back where the
back,
yeah. And so what is that's lordosis?
Yes, that could be like kind of a lordosis condition where core muscles are not activating much, only buttocks are working.
Yeah.
And that the thighs, the quadriceps are becoming tight more.
Right.
Flexors are becoming tight more.
Yeah. And so this is something that I've really started to pay attention to and that I've noticed. And then when it's really funny because actually you had taught us that people who hyperextend through the knees, for people who don't know what I mean by that, that's where you are pressing back on the kneecaps and they, how would you explain that? It almost looks like your legs are kind of scooping.
It's a hyperextension of the knee.
Yeah.
Where we push the knee back and the legs become totally, you know, pressing the back of the knee area.
Yeah. And
is that condition?
Yeah, and you said that that can cause, that when people have that, it can cause anxiety. And I actually was speaking to a woman and she had really hyperextended knees. And I, out of curiosity, said to her, "Do you suffer from anxiety?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah, how do you know that?" And then I started talking to her about yoga. Anyway, so I thought I would share that because...
Then it is, because what happened, because when there is a hyperextension of the knee, breath will be short. Breath right. will be from the chest. Breath cannot go to the diaphragm. So they microbend the knee, breath goes deeper to the diaphragm and it relaxes the mind.
Right.
Now these are the simple things which yoga has to offer, but they are the big thing to live a beautiful and happy life. So yoga work all over the body, not only the body, yoga work on the breath. Because when you are working on the body, how you are breathing, mm-hmm. which normally... in other maybe or maybe not, people don't pay attention. But in yoga posture, the breathing has to be right according to the posture. Then body and breath, same time, how your brain is reacting has to be aware. Because if your brain is tense up there, it means alignments are wrong, breath is wrong. So body, breath and brain work in a synchronicity in a yoga posture, in a yoga workout.
So people should never be forcing the breath in a yoga pose is what you're saying, or holding the breath. Okay.
There are some advancements of yoga, but they are later on. At a normal level, people are not practicing on that way. They are just going to 1 hour class. I will say they have to be just normal breathing. Moving from the diaphragm will be a best help.
Okay. So I guess then that would be a really good time to ask, how does yoga help on a mental level? Because considering that you're saying so much of the physical body does affect, if it's incorrect, it can affect us on a mental level.
Dear Shanti, if we see now, there is a new term in our science of body, and they call that name is psychosomatic. Mm-hmm. Psychosomatic means that body and minds are not two things. They are one actually. Yes, when we have to use language, they become two, but in a deeper level, they are one. Whatever happens on the body, it affects the mind. We can say the body is the visible part of the mind and mind is the invisible part of the body. So it means whenever there is any emotion which take place within me, it affects my body somewhere. Like simply, if there is a fear, it affects almost near to the belly area. People say, oh, I have butterfly in the stomach area, which is common there. Every emotion has effect on the body. And yogis knows it from 1,000 years back. Like the problems are which we face physical, now even science has proved that almost 80 to 90% problems are not physical, they are psychological.
Right.
A particular emotion within me happening, it creating trouble in my body. Basically, problems are coming from in to out. Only 10 or 15% problems are which are viral or infections, they are coming from out to in. But biggest area of the problem is in to out, from mind to body. If I have to say it that way. So like if there are emotions which are negative and I suppress them, they will all suppress around my stomach and hip area. And if there are positive emotion and they are suppressed, they will all take place around the heart and shoulder area. Like if we see into that way, body store the emotions. And in our daily life, we suppress a lot of emotions. Like we cannot really do whatever we want to do. There are a lot of things which I'm not saying good or bad, but it is. We have to suppress a lot of things within ourselves.
Right.
And those suppressed energy become trouble for the body. Simply, if I want to be angry on my boss, it's not possible. If I want to slap my boss, it's not possible. You know? There are consequences. So energy has come in my hand to slap. But what I will do, I will squeeze my hand, I will suppress that energy. Now that suppressed energy is a problem. So either you do something for it, or in yoga, we have arm balancing to release that energy. In yoga, we have inversion to release that energy. Shaking can help that energy. Mm-hmm. So whatever energy I'm suppressing inside, it is taking place somewhere in my body. So yoga postures are designed like that. Like hip opener, they release all the emotion which are stored around the hips area. Like my belly, which we call the guts. A lot of fear and shame and guilt take place there. So yoga have postures, different type posture which release that and help to feel you connect with your guts area. So you can feel your real power there. And then like arm balancing, which all the positive emotions are suppressed within me, there will be no confidence. So yoga work on opening the upper body, backward bend. So coming out from that and facing your own inside. There is no one to face outside, I will say. In yoga, there is no one to face outside. All the time you are facing yourself. So you have to face yourself with love and joy and confidence. And yoga posture, when they work on that, backward bend inversions, they actually design to bring all these emotions into an active way and to release them out so I can feel that energy movement happening within me. Energy is already there. But somehow, because of these blockages of emotion, I can't feel it.
Right.
So yoga remove that so that flow can be there. Flow is already there. But somehow, it's channelized again through yoga posture.
Yeah, because, you know, I was just thinking as you were saying that about the Halanasana, the plow pose, when I had... in this pose, and all of a sudden I had such an emotional, like a very intensely emotional reaction and memories and like just so much stored energy started to come out. And I could not believe like how much energy was stored in my body. And that is something I've noticed with yoga. All of a sudden you move your body and this memory comes out and you're like, where did that come from?
See, it is, my dear, like all these emotions take place in our muscles, take place in our joints, and take place in our organs. Mm-hmm. And they contract the body. That's why yoga comes with expansion, because release. There is a psychological effect of that, but there is a physical effect of that also. Yoga starts from the physical first. Like, all these emotions which are restored in my organs and suppressed there, they has to release out. And that's why you said when that posture happens, it come out. Mm-hmm. When you do the posture with the right way, with the right timing, actually slowly, slowly it starts releasing all that what is there.
Right. So you were saying about inversions and arm balancing being really good. Is that like for people who might be experiencing like a loss of power, anger, like is that what you're referring?
All these emotions, you know, what we say that there is anger, there is frustration, there are competitions, there are jealousy. These are the blockages that a human is not able to feel the life in its real realms. Mm. And they are restored within me. So yoga postures are there, then yoga breathing is there. Like yoga breathing help a person. Like in the breathing chapter, every emotion is related to a particular breath. Like in the anger, the rhythm of breath will be fast. Simply say, let's say all the negative emotions, the rhythm of the breath will be fast. And all the relax and positive emotion which are relaxed, the breath, the rhythm of the breath will be slow. So if a person who work on pranayama in yogic chapter, they start working on conditioning their breath slow and steady and in a rhythm. Like slowly inhale from the diaphragm, slowly exhale from the diaphragm, and they start practice this rhythm. Now, if any emotion comes, but you don't allow your rhythm of the breath to change, that emotion will never overpower you. So people practice the rhythm of the breath, and then through the rhythm of the breath, they understand them these mental realms, that how now the person who is working on pranayama will work on the rhythm of the anger. Okay, maybe anger is there, my breaths are 30 breath per minute. When competition is there, my breaths are 25 breath per minute. If the jealousy is there, maybe 22 to 23 breath per minute. So breath rhythm will be fast. But when a person is on the beach, when a person is on the loving and relaxed environment, the breath will be only 4 to 5 breath per minute.
Right.
So they take a note. And then they start practicing that rhythm of the breath, which make them relax. And when a person have gone through just 3 months, every day giving half an hour to the breathing rhythm and checking it in your daily routine, you will find that slowly, slowly, the peace is part of you. It's the byproduct of you. And the your only awareness is that don't allow the breath to change them. Or even it is changing, watch it and slowly, slowly bring it back. That is we call spiritual practice in yoga. This is the way yogi work on their mind, through the breath.
Right.
And then there is the other part, which is meditation. Meditation means becoming aware about your inner world without judging it. This is meditation. Becoming aware about your inner world without judging it. Don't judge whatever is inside. Just notice it. Notice your thought. Notice your emotion. And this is the way of then yoga bring awareness. And then meditation take a person to the deeper within, to the real self.
I like that. Now, if only everyone could slow their breath down to 4 breaths per minute. That's also something
I can give a speed here.
What's that?
I can give a speed here for everyone. If anybody can work 6 breaths per minute, they condition their breath slowly, slowly with the practice, slowly in 6 breaths per minute, just 1 week. If they can do this rhythm, every time they walk, they check their breath is slow. Every time they sit down, they check their breath is slow. 6 breaths per minute, there will be a big psychological shift within.
Okay, that's such a good reminder. Well, the breath and pranayama you're talking about, I think as you go on in your yoga journey, you can also become more skilled in positively manipulating your energies with pranayama and yoga, because I know that yoga is also on an energetic level really helpful. Can you explain a little bit about how that works?
Let's say we bring a word here, like I have a car and I don't know how to use this car and I'm trying to drive this car. What will happen?
You're going to crash.
Crash and accident, all that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if I know how to use this car properly, how to drive properly, how to move forward and how to save myself, I can enjoy the whole countryside with this car, isn't it?
Right.
So let's say our energy is neutral. Energy is not destructive or constructive. Energy is energy. But in the modern world, mostly the way has given to is destructive.
Right.
Like competition is a destructive way. If a person who loves his job, who loves his work, no need any competition to move forward. The love of the work is enough to move forward in the work, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So competition is a byproduct of sick mind, which is not good or not bad, but energy is there. I need to give it a constructive way. And breath and pranayama help us to move our energy in a constructive way.
Okay.
Like if a person who is doing pranayama rightly will soon find his interest will be in music. It's a constructive way. A person who is doing pranayama will find his interest in maybe painting, maybe dancing. They will find, some people will find after pranayama practice, maybe they want to do gardening. Or some people want to just walk in the nature peaceful. Maybe some people feel like after pranayama practice, they just want to go hospital and give flower to a sick person. Or they want to help someone. This is the pranayama practice will give a constructive way to the energy. So this energy will become creative and helpful for the others.
So you can better direct your energy in a more inspired way.
Yes.
Okay.
In a beautiful way, which can be constructive for you and which can be constructive for the society. And pranayama is a big help to give a creative way to your energy, because you are in touch with your emotion through your breath, and breath is more deeper than the emotion. So when you are in touch with your breath, breath will take you beautifully. I'm not saying that emotions are bad. This has to be understood, because sometimes people understand I am condemning the emotion. No, there is a way of life where we live under the emotion. And there is a way of life where we live above the emotion and can enjoy them.
Right.
So pranayama is a creative way to bring your energy, your own presence above the emotion.
Okay. So is this like, kind of like finding the middle way, like in a sense of like the tamas, rajas, and sattva, like through pranayama? Is that kind of what you're referring to in that sense of energy? Well,
let's see, if we have to go into that chapter, then we have to understand that all three are needed for the life.
Okay.
Tamas, let's say tamas mean darkness, and rajas mean daylight, and sattva mean the balance between these two, like the middle time when day is meeting the night and night is meeting the day. So when we use sattva, rajas, tamas, tamas has been called for inertia also. Rajas has been talked for activeness also. And sattva mean the balance also. They all are part of life. Now, if I say darkness is very much needed for the life, otherwise how to sleep? Day is needed in the life because how to work then? And they are not opposite than each other. They are balancing each other. Because if I sleep well, I can work well. If I work well, I can sleep well. So they are part of life, but how to use them rightly? That's what I'm saying. Like tamas, inertia has its own value. Rajas has his own value. Sattva has his own value. Sometime I need activeness. Sometime I need laziness. Sometime I need balance. So pranayama brought up that energy in a person that you become more aware about these factors and how can you use them in a creative way rather than destructive way.
Right. Okay. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's definitely something that's always stuck with me is knowing sort of that sense of when I'm being too inactive and when I need to move, and then when I'm being too active and knowing that it's okay, it's time to rest. I need to like relax, unwind, have a bath or something like that. And just kind of, I refer back to, again, the zig and the zag of trying to find the middle way.
The middle way is not out, my dear. This has to be understood because mostly people are living how to do the things outside. Now, there is a big dilemma. If a person is trying to balance, actually will create more imbalance.
So basically, I try too hard.
Yes, my dear. Understand it. And this has to be understood by every person in the world who is working on the inner world.
Right.
See, balance is a state within, not out. I have to be balanced within me and then the outside will be balanced. If I'm trying to do the balance outside, it is again becoming something. No. I have to find a state within me, which is being, the state of being. The state of being is the balance. So it is not, balancing is not an act. It is a rest. And every act must come out from the rest. Are you getting me? I can be a little paradoxical here.
I'm trying to follow.
Most of the act, what we are doing, that act is coming from anxiety, isn't it? That act is coming from becoming something. That act is coming from something achieving.
Right.
Now, the act which is coming out of this, how it can bring the balance? If I have ambitions to fulfill, I'm acting, it's already in balance in the inner world. Now say, within me there is a rest. And all my activities are coming from the rest. Like if I'm talking, it's coming from the rest. If I'm meeting someone, it is coming out of the rest. The state of the being. And then, rajas is beautiful. When behind of that rajas is there is an awareness. When my awareness is guiding my activity, not my activity is guiding me. It's a very paradoxical answer. Most of the time there is an activity, but there is no rest.
Right.
And that activity is leading me to some ambition, some goals, and I'm trying to balance. Balance will never happen. Balance is a state of being. I have to work within me to achieve balance, not outside.
Right.
Outside can be a help. Changing the environment can be help. Doing a practice, a method can be help. But the real change happens within.
Okay, so be more effortless.
Let's put me into another way. Be in the effort in an effortless way.
Be in the effort. Okay. Wow. I think I get it.
In an effortless way. Let's say, okay. Imagine a person who is going to a morning walk. Okay. He will enjoy the morning walk. Is there an effort in that? No. There is an effort, but he's enjoying it. So the enjoyment and effort become together. It's an effortless effort. Now a person same is going to the office will be very different. But if a person can go to the office with the same joyful way and can do his whole work in joyful way, is effortless effort. So when I am enjoying whatever I am doing, it can be walk, it can be food, it can be my work, whatever I am doing, and the base of that doing is enjoyment. We call in yoga, it's a effortless effort. You can do your whole work like that. My teaching is like that. I like talking to you is such a joy right now for me. It's not effort. But I am taking such an effort to explain you, isn't it?
And I'm taking such an effort to understand.
and there is a joy behind that.
Okay. See, I'm trying to like intellectually understand what you're saying, and I think I'm balancing, like I've got the joy part, but there's definitely some effort happening.
let, let me put simply, when joy and effort become together,
okay,
it is an effortless effort.
Okay, I think I might be an effortless effort now.
You are. And well, this can continue all of your day, whatever you do, you got the knack of meditation.
Oh, I've got some work to do. I know. Inside. Do you? It's true. Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, you always seem like very, very happy. Like, do you ever like have your moments where like, I feel like I can't imagine you being mad. I'm sure you get angry. Like, of course you do. You're a human being, but like, I can't picture it.
See, I enjoy my anger.
What do you do when you get angry? How do you like? Just
enjoy it. Be with it. Total 100%.
Beat a pillow and enjoy it.
See, in that moment, it's a spontaneity.
Okay.
But if you are able to be 100% with the anger, 100% with the anger, what it means? Close your eyes and watch your anger. And be with it.
Yeah.
Rather than saying it is good or bad, without any try to change it. Let me say again, if I can be with my anger 100% without thinking it is bad and without creating any future that I must change it, just face it total, something happened then, which everybody has to experience.
Oh, you know, it's your thing about, what did you say? You said, when you said, what do you have to do when you need to go to the bathroom? You go, you close the door, you take your shit, you deal with it. And it's the same thing for spiritual and mental shit. You go, you close the door, you do your business.
Deal with it. Anger is not bad. Emotions are not bad, but I don't know how to deal with them.
Hmm.
Now, I always say there is a physical constipation, there is a psychological constipation. And when this constipation is there, they're going to be trouble. If a physical constipation is there, you cannot live your day well. Imagine that you're holding the shit and trying to talk to the people. Not possible at all, my dear. So psychological shit is the same. So much emotion, anger, problem thing I'm holding within and I'm trying to enjoy the world.
Mm-hmm.
Not possible. I have to deal with it.
What about the opposite?
And yoga is a beautiful way.
But you said spiritual constipation or psychological constipation. What about psychological diarrhea? Where people can't hold anything in. Is that also possible?
And, see, my dear, we see that when a person gets mad, create trouble all around, isn't it?
Yeah, where everyone's
now, if a person gets angry, getting mad at everyone.
Right.
That is a diarrhea.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, they can't hold it in.
So, my dear, we are just joking in that way. It is beautiful. But, see, there are people who are introvert. They hold within.
Mm-hmm.
And there are extrovert who can't hold within, they throw everything out without knowing that it is creating more trouble for them.
Right.
If I'm angry on someone and I release that anger on a person, the other person will be angry, the circle will start. So in yoga, we say if any emotion is coming, thank you to the person that you become the reason that I could see that these things exist within me. So thank you to the person who have made you angry. Be aware that this person has made you angry. Now thank you this person. Finish it. Go into your room. Close your eyes and be with this anger. Totally watch what is happening within you. How the blood is now circulating. How your breath is changing. You have to face it. And you have to face it without the language.
Hmm.
Like language will come. Oh, it should not be there. Or I must achieve a state in the future that there should not be anger. No, forget about all past and future now. Just be in this moment, face this anger 100%. I don't want to say more than that because a person who wants to experience, they have to do it. They must close their eyes and face with the anger 100%, completely. Be with it and see what happened in 5 minutes or 10 minutes.
Right. So I guess that would be like a good way, because I know I've been trying to follow along with my intellect here on some of these concepts that really can only be felt and experienced. Yes. But how does yoga help on an intellectual and intelligence level?
See, in yoga, we must say that intellectual and intelligence level are two different things.
Okay.
Intelligence is I am born with. A child is born with intelligence. But intellectual properties come when they go to school, when they go to university, they read the books, then become intellectual. So intelligence is the part of my real self. I am born with it. And intellectual is beautiful. It's very good. It's part of the personality, which in yoga we call is good, is beautiful, but is a false self. It is created by others. So intellectual is beautiful, but it's part of personality. But intelligence is part of being.
Okay.
So intellectual level can help me to live in this world with such a way that I can see what is good for me and what is not. Like what food you want to eat, your intellectual system will help you. Okay, this has this nutrition, this has this thing for me, this is this thing for me. So I can take care of myself well, isn't it? Intellect can help you. Okay, what kind of company I want to choose, what kind of people I want to spend time with. These decisions are intellectual. But there is an intelligence above it, which has to be awakened. And yoga work on awakening that intelligence more than intellectual.
Okay.
Because this intelligence is part of intuitive being. So right now, we have two things. Intellect, which is beautiful. It's needed to live in the life. Like language is the part of, let me say beautifully, language is the part of intellect, not the part of intelligence.
Right.
Intuitions and the understanding, which is beyond the language, is the part of intelligence. So yoga work to awaken the intelligence level more. So when the intelligence level is there, actually intellectual, which is all the time constant thoughts and things are going on within me, like thinking. A human is 24-hour intellectual, actually. All the time thinking, thinking, thinking. And that's the reason I can't rest. I need to awaken my intelligence level where there is no language. The two things within me together. Language is also within me, but if I am also there, which is born without a language. Language was given to me. It is not part of me.
Great.
So I have to identify that. I have to understand that part of me, which is beyond the language. That is the wonder of yoga. If somebody slowly, slowly start entering there, the wonder of the being start opening to that person. Yoga finally takes there. Through intellectual, it takes you out of intellectual. Let's say, journey from logic to love. Love is not intellectual thing. Love is not something which can put in the word. So the word of love is out of language, out of intellect. So logic is part of intellect. Yoga is a journey from logic to love. From words to silence.
Yeah, that reminds me of...
reason to joy.
Sorry?
From reason to joy. Joy has no reason.
That reminds me of a lesson from Guru Mukh, actually, where he sat us down in the field, and he said, I want you all to just observe and look at everything around you, but don't label it. As soon as you notice yourself labeling, that is a bird, that is a dog, you know, just relax and just observe, because as children, you're just experiencing the joy of love and the world and exploring. And then when you start to learn words, you're like, okay, that is a tree, that is a dog, that is a bird. And so you start to label. And so instead of just experiencing something, you're now in the process or almost obsessing over labeling what things are. And it takes you out of the experience of just being. And I remember sitting down in this field and I saw a group of dogs and my mind was like, dog, dog, hot dog, doggity dog. Like I could not stop labeling. And I realized just how true that is, where the mind, like you were saying, on an intellectual level, wants to pull you away from the intelligence level of just being in the moment.
And there is a one thing more, my dear, in this. When a person start entering into this journey, they start fighting with themselves. Like now, if the words are coming and I am inside, oh, I should not say it. I should stop myself. Actually, again, a fight has happened. Even the mind is saying the word, or whatever mind is saying, you just be aware about it. Don't say anything about it now. You getting me? Like mind will say, whenever you see something, mind will say something. And now inside of me, I created another me, which is saying, I should not say this. But mind is saying this. I should not say this. Now that is the whole conflict.
Right.
So in that realm has to be very careful. Whatever mind will say, whatever mind will bring, I must silently observe it, even whatever it say. Then intelligence level is awakening. But if I start fighting with it, still intellectual level is there, which is beautiful. We need intellectual level also to live in this world. But only intellectual is half. Logic is half. If a person who has not experienced love cannot see the beauty of life. So yoga said, use your intellectual well to find out what is right for you. And then slowly, slowly go beyond this intellectual level also, where you can enjoy the world of beauty, truth, and love. So both in balance.
Right. Yes.
By knowing it.
So basically, do more yoga.
Yes. But effortless effort.
Okay. I still have to get the knack of that. So I guess in what ways can yoga help to achieve a blissful state of being?
Now there are many words in your question which I have to see first. That how yoga will help to achieve a blissful state. Now first thing has to understood in that, because question has to be understood, the attitude of achieving is already out of bliss.
Damn it. Oops.
Now we have to understand, because then the right message can be delivered, you know, like and it's okay. Mind has always learned in the language of achieving. Mm-hmm. I have to achieve that. Let's say, I'm going to put this question, how to discover it?
Okay.
Discover, because I am born with it. I am born with the bliss. Look at a child. I have been a child. So a child is born in a bliss. But it is covered now. How to uncover it?
Right.
And now when we are going to uncover it, actually, it is a process where we call it is a joyful process with a touch of pain.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It is a joyful process with a touch of pain. What is my meaning by that? Because as a child, what I am, actually, I am not nothing in that moment. I'm a pure bliss. But slowly, slowly, things has taken place. And my own faith, now here again I have to say that faith, belief, according to yogic understandings, are given by outside. You are simply born as you, without anything. Let me say this word. We are born ourselves without anything. And then we start identifying with, I am this, I am this, I am this, I want to be this. So many layers has taken place. I will bring again there. Now, to uncover myself, to peel, in yoga we say that there is a right knowledge and there is a wrong knowledge. Wrong knowledge which is given by outside. Like simply say that I am born without a name, isn't it?
Right.
Who gave me name? My parents. And then I start believing that I am deep. I am born without a name. What that was? I am just born. It's like I am what I am. But then that me has given a name. So I become deep. Now, this deep is a personality. The personality word comes from persona, a mask. Now, nobody knows who I am. Actually, nobody knows. But they, okay, give me a name, deep. Then they give me a identity that you are from here, this place. You are Indian. Now I become deep, I become Indian, then I become this, then I identified with some sort of parties, belongings, then I start identify with all those experiences which are coming from that, and then I have my own faith as deep, then I have own belief as deep. No, this deep, which is not real, given by others, carries so much drama within, isn't it?
Yeah.
And start fighting for it. I am this, I am this, I am this. Yoga means you are none. You are not even your name. It can be changed anytime. And all is in memory. The moment memory gone, who are you? But doesn't mean memory is bad. Memory is beautiful. Memory has a use. But we have to understand that whatever I am thinking I am is not me. It is somehow given by others, which in yoga we call wrong knowledge. And what is right knowledge? Which you are born with. A capacity. There is a knowledge which is given by outside, but there is a power to know I am born with it. I am the ability to know, but knowledge is coming from outside. So is it possible slowly, slowly I can get away from all the knowledge and I can stay with the ability to know? So that state within me, I am born already with bliss. So yoga method is like that. It's not giving you anything. Actually, it's taking away everything. What you think you are. And leading you into utter silence. To discover who you are. And once you discover who you are, that is the bliss. You're getting me?
I am.
Hope you are getting me.
I hope I am too, actually. Who knows?
So, there is a state within me, the bliss. So I have to uncover it. I have to discover it. And yoga gives all the tools and method through the posture, through the breathing, through the meditation, how slowly, slowly you uncover a diamond which is hidden within you.
I like that. Oh, I miss laughing yoga. That's what I miss. I tried doing that with people here and they thought I was crazy. I have one friend, my friend Elle. She's the only one who will do laughing yoga with me because she took her yoga course and she gets that. But yeah, I miss doing laughing yoga, and it's not something a lot of people do. But yeah,
actually, it's a way of getting out of the mind, you know, which is frightening for most of us.
Yeah.
That. Because if you're thinking, you cannot laugh. And if you're laughing, you cannot think. My master used to say these words. He said, if you're thinking, you cannot laugh. And if you're laughing, you cannot think. So laughing is a meditation. It brings the joy, laughter, love, everything outside. So mostly, again, you know, through all these suppressions of emotions and system, the blockages are a lot there. So if a person laughs, blockages can be out. I'm simply saying no need to anything. If a person can laugh, no need to do anything. Just 20 to 30 minutes, keep laughing every day and all the blockages will be clear. So now you can teach that.
I feel like laughing yoga is something that is definitely needed, but I have tried to get a few people to do that with me, and I have become very self-conscious in those moments because I don't feel that a lot of people can really let themselves just let themselves go and just let loose and laugh for no reason. Like, people really feel like they need to have a reason to laugh. Anyways, and so I definitely tried to share that with a few different people, and they didn't get it. And then I felt like a mad woman. I felt like a bit of a maniac.
See, actually, laughter is a direct entry into the bliss.
Hmm.
And the bliss is the real self. It can be frightening.
Hmm.
It is like getting out of the whole logical mind.
Right.
It's not easy for many people, but slowly, slowly can make them ready.
So is that why you think people might avoid sitting with themselves? They might avoid meditation. They might avoid yoga.
Same thing. Yes. Because I have to face myself.
Right.
And without facing your own self in your reality, there is no other solution. So that's why I'm saying it's a joyful process with a touch of pain. You have to face whatever within, it's yours. All has to be uncovered, all has to be faced, all has to be sit with, and it has to be watched. And yoga gives that courage. A yogi, a practitioner, slowly, slowly through practice get that courage that let me find myself in my reality, who I am.
Right.
Yoga prepare for that final question, who I am.
Well,
if I'm not my name, I'm not my identity, I'm not my country, I'm not my culture, I'm somehow accidentally born on one place. And imagine if I'm born on one place and some other country people adopt me, that will be my culture and my things. So it means everything can be replaced, but the reality of me cannot be replaced. So yoga is slowly, slowly entering into that. Yes, we don't forget the muscle. Body has to be healthy. So a yogi must enjoy the pleasure of life. It is a gift of life, all the pleasures of life. And we need a healthy body for it.
Right.
So yoga gives a healthy body to enjoy the psychological realm, like a music, a painting, a dance, to joy with someone. We need a healthy mind who has capacity to be happy. Yogic science gives us tools to stay happy on mental level. And then heart is cheerfulness, joy. Then yoga has all the methods to work on the heart, that your heart has to be conditioned in the right way, you know. that joyful heart, how you can be cheerful on the heart level, and then how to be peaceful on the soul level, and how to celebrate the whole life. Yoga, working through the body, making it healthy, going through the mind, leaving it happy, making it way to the heart, more loved and cheerful, going to the soul, becoming peace, and then, which we call oneness in yoga, union, that you feel that this whole earth, every human being, plant are connected, we are one. So lead a way towards the celebration of life.
That's so lovely. Yeah. I was going to say, you know, we've been chatting for about an hour, maybe a little over an hour now. So before I let you go, I wanted to kind of touch on the online program that you've created, because I know that you've put an online program together, correct? And we're going to be slowly sharing some of that with
yes.
with people.
Yes, my dear. I have a few courses like online, which mm-hmm. which we will together bring forward. It's like a healing yoga, how to use the body rightly. That is a course with 21 postures, teaching a sequence step by step, every pose, and how to be correct on the body weight. Then I have a course on breathing. Then how to create vinyasa courses, like how you can create your own vinyasa sequence.
Okay.
To help yourself through different emotions. And then I have a course on sun salutation, because it's a beautiful practice, how it can help you physically, psychologically, and right alignment of the posture, right breathing, right way of going into the posture is there. Sure.
Okay.
You will be the one who can share all of that.
Yeah, we'll be sharing that with all of you. I just wanted you to explain a little bit more about what it is so that we could slowly introduce it. But I just wanted to ask, as you were mentioning that, is this going to be something that people will have to have prior knowledge or training in yoga, or can somebody who is not previously certified also gain benefit from this?
See, this is a course which beginner can start, because I'm starting from the beginning level. Okay. And people who are doing yoga, they can come to know what are the right alignments. And if they know the right alignments, what is the right way of breathing? What are the benefits of them and how they
can use
it? So I will say
it
will be effective for all levels there, okay. for the student, to teacher, to the household, to the office worker, that how they can give a constructive way to their energy.
Okay.
Through the yoga practice.
And will these be video lectures? Will there be written part, or how will it look?
There is a video also and written also.
Okay, perfect. And I guess, where can people find you if they want to connect with you? Because you've got Yoga Samiti. And you've also, well, through me, but but what if someone wants to follow you? You have Yoga Samiti, and then you've also got your YouTube, you've got Instagram. Like, what's the best way for people to find you?
If the people really want to learn yoga and want to see the tips, how I'm sharing, and they go to my Instagram and my Facebook page. Like, my Instagram is Yoga Deep, and my Facebook page is also Yoga Deep.
Yoga Deep. Okay.
Yoga Deep, or my Facebook page name is Deep Yoga Instructor.
Okay.
Like, there actually, whatever I am saying to you, I am sharing all the postures and breathing technique free there also on my page and Instagram. Whoever want to learn, they can go to my page, especially Instagram, and they can find simple, small tips to be benefit in their daily practice.
Yeah, you have a lot
on there. There is my website. There is a website there. It's like deepyogaacademy.com.
Okay.
And there my courses and workshops are there, which are happening in the future.
So if people want to do trainings with you.
Yes. Like, I do 1 month teacher training programs, 21 day and 30 days, and 7 days workshops also, where people come and they they experience it, what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because yoga to me is my joy. Mm-hmm. It's a effortless effort for me, so I enjoy it a lot. People come to me, I enjoy guiding them through this science, because somehow through my experience, through my teacher blessing, my master blessings, and through yogic understanding, somehow a path has been very clear to me, where I can hold a person and can help them to walk till they don't understand. Once they start understanding, I take my finger back, because if all the time my finger is there, oh, they cannot walk by themselves. So I help them to on the path, walk on the path. And then once their legs are stronger, they understand a lot, then I give them my best wishes. I'm there for any guidance, but walk your own path. Oh.
Right. That's so nice. So are you still doing, you're doing 200 hours. Are you still doing 300 hour trainings also?
Yes, we have 100 hour, we have 200 hour, we have 300 hour, we have 50 hour.
Okay. And it's all multi-level.
Wherever a person feel like to start.
Okay. And it's all multi-style yoga?
Yes.
Okay.
You can say it basically like Hatha yoga is the main. Mm-hmm. Like all other yoga, whatever you call yoga right now in the world, all are the branches of Hatha yoga. Either it is Vinyasa, either it is Ashtanga, either it is Iyengar. So basically we understand the posture, how to go rightly, and then how to sequence it, and what are the benefits of it, contradiction it, how it can help you psychologically and spiritually. So we go through all of that. So we can call it multi-style.
Okay.
But mostly my student call it is a deep yoga.
Okay.
It's not my name. It's like going deeper within you.
Right. Well, I can definitely put my stamp of approval on your yoga training, because it was life-changing for me. Like, I am an absolutely different person because of the experience I had with you and Guru Mukh and all of the people in our yoga family. And through the last couple of years of recovering from my car accident in some very hard times, I've been able to go back to that time and pull so much strength and light. So I want to say thank you so much, not only for coming on the podcast today, but for the light you are sharing with people, because you're doing something very wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you for all of you for having me, listening to me. Yeah. And thanks to you also to making this effort.
No
problem. So this knowledge can be shared, my dear, and I will say keep practicing within and without together.
Yeah.
So yoga can lead you to the blissful state and help you to uncover yourself. So I will say my final and last phrase for you, which I always say, Shanti, tu kehna kyun nahi manti. Hope they will understand that.
Well, thank you.
I wish Shanti, listen to me and keep doing yoga.
I will. And we're going to have you come back on the podcast again so people can continue to get your knowledge and teachings. And thank you.
Sure,
my. Namaste.
Namaste. Blessings. Blessings for all of you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to hear more, be sure to hit like and subscribe. Any reviews are also very helpful and much appreciated, my friends. You can also head on over to Patreon and support the show by signing up at www.patreon.com/Shanti Ma. That's S-H-A-N-T-I-H-M-A. With your support, I'm able to produce more podcasts, which in turn helps spread the good vibes to all. Thanks again. Until next time. Bye.